Hello and welcome to the Blind Shots Podcast. I'm your host, David Hill, coming to you from the 13th fairway at Kearney Hill, wondering why the wind is never, ever at my back on any shot on this hole. And this is Season 5, Episode 8. In this episode, I'm thrilled to welcome back to the show Chris Boysell, PGA. Chris is a veteran PGA professional here in Central Kentucky. He's currently overseeing tournament operations and player development for the city golf courses and programs here in Lexington. We sat down a couple of years ago in the middle of the pandemic to talk golf and golf participation. I wanted to follow up with Chris to see what's changed, what's the same, and what he sees in the near future for golf in our area. The leagues, the championships, the adult and junior programming, they all look a little different than they did 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm keen to understand what they might look like in 5 or 10 more years. Municipal golf programs like we have here in Lexington are really the gateway to golf for just tons of people. Sure, some kids will grow up following mom and dad around the country club or learning the game from grandma or grandpa at their golf club. But for a couple ages now, the little municipal or humble daily fee course down the road is where we find the game. It may be changing in the age of top golf and simulator leagues, but the renewed focus on the recreation part of parks and recreation happening across the country and here locally is a wholly positive development as far as I can see. And Chris does a great job of laying out what kinds of opportunities exist for golfing gypsies like me and my boys. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that since this was recorded on the last day of February, right now as you're listening to this, registration for the Play Golf Lex Am Tour presented by Michelob Ultra events are now open, as are the Lexington City Championships. So if you're interested in registering or learning more about them, head to lexingtonky.gov/playgolflexamtour. It's just a hyphen in between those words after the slash. Or Google Play Golf Lex Am Tour, or just find them on Twitter at Play Golf Lex, and click around, scroll around, and it'll get you there. Before we dive in, a reminder that the Blind Shots Podcast is made possible without commercial interruption or the influence of training aids because of my job as David Hill Realtor with Rector Hayden Realtors. I help people sell their houses and find new homes, as well as helping investors and businesses with their commercial needs here in Central Kentucky. It's always a great time to be a homeowner, and with interest rates currently hanging steady, if you want to know what's happening in our market and want to get ahead of the spring rush, please reach out. You can email me at davidhill@rhr.com, and I'll be happy to start a conversation with you. And with that, here's my friend, PGA professional, Chris Boysell. It's kind of interesting. Well, one of the things I want to start with you, since last time we sat down, the COVID boom has turned into what? You know, there's a lot of names on waiting lists around private golf clubs. There's a lot of initiation fees that are paying deferred maintenance off at golf courses all around the world. A lot of new construction. All of a sudden, people are building golf again. Within the context of the city and what you're seeing, just tell me a little bit about what you're seeing and kind of what you're expecting for 2024 in terms of participation, how many, who that looks like. What's different since the last time we sat down, Chris, a couple of years ago?
Well, I mean, COVID, which obviously everyone around golf knows, has been really huge for as far as participation for golf. I mean, during COVID, I mean, tee sheets were completely booked all day, every day during COVID, during the height of it. And we really have noticed a continued increase in that as far as just general participation and everything that we do. I mean, our daily rates, our daily rounds, depending on which way you look, obviously our fiscal year kind of runs July through June. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, as golfers, you always like to think of the calendar year more. I mean, we've been up between 14 to 20% increase from pre-COVID. The bottom line of the city has also, as far as the what, you know, profit loss, you ever want to call it. I mean, the
right.
city.
I mean, you're an entrepreneurial those, department.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. We're not speaking necessarily those terms, but when you look at those raw numbers, those numbers are significantly better than they were pre-COVID. And again, daily play is up. And then we also notice it in all the programming that we do. It's kind of interesting because we have dynamically changed some of the programming since I've been here as well. So it's kind of one of those, is it the chicken or the egg thing? So, you know, our social media presence, our offerings of tournaments, events, things like that has increased since then, but also golf has increased. So a great example is our summer junior golf camps that we have. So our golf and summer camps. This summer, a little different summer, it's a little shorter summer than typical in Fayette County for some reason. I don't know the reason behind it, but we have 6 camps this year. When we opened them a couple weeks ago, they sold out in an hour and a half.
Oh my goodness. That's Sweet and Cove like numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And now granted, pre-COVID our camps would sell out eventually, mm-hmm. but they didn't sell out in 2 hours like they did now. Same thing for like our adult classes. Like when I first got here 6 years ago, there were sometimes we just didn't have an adult class for the month because we didn't have enough people that want to participate. And literally last year, almost every single one of our offerings that we had completely sold out.
I should mention that you're in a new role. You have a much more direct hand in the programming now,
yes.
coordinating championships and programs. You were the head pro at Kearney Hill last
yes.
time, so you,
yes.
your role has changed. So you're probably seeing a wider breadth of what's going on. You mentioned those clinics. Who are your typical clientele for that? Are those people new to golf?
Yes.
Okay, it's not people coming back necessarily?
Well, I'm talking about more skill level wise.
Okay.
Skill level wise is very beginner to just barely past beginner. We have usually a couple people that might be a little bit past that, but primarily it's maybe they played a long time ago and they're just taking it up, or brand new golfers who've never played before. But the skill level is very introductory. We even had probably more than that last year that people didn't have their own clubs. Now, we will provide them for them. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually got caught up a little bit. I was like, oh, wow, we need 8 sets this time instead of 2 or 3 like we might have had in the past. So it definitely says that's people that have probably never played golf or played so long ago that they don't have clubs or were laying around the garage gathering
right.
dust.
Okay. That's interesting that it's still through – are you expecting – well, I guess – you expecting that same kind of performance for those clinics this year? Are you
yeah,
seeing
so
that?
For instance, we sent out a monthly newsletter that we send out every month that kind of tells about everything we have going on. And, you know, these new email trackers and things like that can tell you what specific things were clicked on and all those kind of things. And I was actually even surprised myself. The number one thing that was clicked on in our last newsletter that was a clickable thing, I guess, that you could track was our adult classes of anything we have. The city championships, the scrambles, the junior tour, the anything. It was actually the adult classes, which kind of was, you know.
That's a little bit remarkable, and I'm going to ask you to speculate and go way out beyond your expertise and just say, talk to me a little bit about how you think. One of my things I used to beat my spoon on my high chair about is that I felt like the city of the Parks and Recreation Department, that the parks were the shiny, pretty things that everybody wanted, and the recreation mission kind of got left behind. Like, I remember in college, there were city volleyball leagues and tennis leagues and adult clinics,
yes.
like you're talking about. And through the Great Recession and some other things, I felt like the emphasis on that had really gone away. You know, I say that to ask you this question. Do you think these are people new to golf that look to the city courses first, or you think you're cannibalizing people from private instruction play, Man of War, Athens? You know, we've got a big instructional community around
yes,
Lexington,
very large, yes.
and we also still have, if you take kind of the greater area, we still have a lot of golf clubs and country clubs around. So, kind of within the golf space. Are you finding that the city is the point of entry for people, that these city courses, or where are these people coming from, I guess is kind of my question.
That's actually the million-dollar question for me. That's what I kind of covered earlier. It's like, so before 6 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, the social media presence, the things that we did, we weren't even very public about. So were those people actually out there? They just didn't know we were offering it. Or is it just because there's more people and now, you know, where you would have had 2-3 people that wanted to take the class, now there's 10 to 15 people that take the class just purely on participation numbers in general, people playing golf.
And people, they see around the office, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to go try to play 9-hole. Okay, there may be some,
yes,
some organic growth just because more people are playing golf.
Yes. I wish I knew the answer specifically to that. My best guess is I think it's a little of both.
Okay.
I think we are doing a lot better job of letting people know what we have than we probably have in the past. And so I think now the word is getting out a little bit better on those things. And then once they take a look at it and then say, okay, this is what, you know, the city is offering, this is what another private instruction thing is offering, then maybe at that point it's maybe it comes down to pricing, or maybe it comes down to, you know, availability that the days and times that it's offered,
right,
or the formatting possibly. I know that, for instance, you know, I know a lot of golf professionals around here, especially a lot of people that are in those industries, and a lot of them are tending to focus maybe more on intermediate, like even classes-wise they're doing.
Right.
I'm not saying they're not offering some of those. So maybe the offering that we're doing is changing a little bit from what, you know, for instance, you know, Man of War Golf, who I worked at, you know, years ago, they're more into some, you know, coaching programs and things like that than they were even when I was there a decade ago.
It's interesting the way that market's kind of settling out. Now, just to give people an idea, what are you covering at these adult clinics? Is this grip, stance, here's how you address the ball, or are you doing, you know, one of my great pet peeves is who's responsible for teaching these new people the, not the unwritten rules, but kind of the etiquette? Like, here, you know, what's a typical bullet point outline for some of these clinics?
So in our adult classes, we basically offer two different classes now. So we offer basically one that's purely instructional.
Okay.
Now, we may touch a couple of those things in those classes, but those classes are an hour long, and we basically, they're 4 weeks, and the first week we cover, like, putting.
Okay.
Second week, cover pitching and chipping.
Good. So you start from the green and work back.
We work back.
Thank God bless.
Yes. third week, we do, like, full swing as far as, like, irons, and then we cover the woods. And we may touch on some of those topics in that. Our other classes called, we call Golf 101. We do basically 30 minutes of instruction, so it's very, very, like, finite instruction.
Yeah.
Like, more, we're going to gloss over this topic, and then we actually spend an hour on the golf course. And in that hour on the golf course, we do a multitude of things.
Okay.
A lot of those things you're talking about, specifically, like, okay, this is what a scramble is. This is where a tee box is. These are the tees on the golf course.
Here's where you stand. Here's where you don't stand.
Yes.
You know, for safety and
yes,
courtesy and those sorts,
yes,
of things.
And we do a lot of that while covering that specific topic for the day. We kind of go in order the same way, putting followed by full swing in the fourth week. We kind of spend more time on that specific topic, but while we are on the golf course, we touch on those other things. And the way we started scheduling it last year, which was, you know, kind of, this was kind of my brainchild as far as doing this. Formally, we'd have it like, okay, this class this month's going to be all at Lakeside. Then this class is going to be all at Kearney the next month, so on and so forth. Because we have multiple facilities, I wanted the people, especially these people that are in the level that are coming to these classes, mm-hmm, beginner to slightly beginner, I wanted them to, one, experience all of our golf courses. Now, we only do 4 weeks, so unfortunately Meadowbrook does get a little bit left out as far as that, but we do obviously talk about that as well. But I wanted them to be able to come in, pull in the parking lot, know where that place is, know where the pro shop was. And then the other way we have it set up is I primarily am at almost every class. But then whoever's kind of the staff members there, the pros, the assistants, are usually the ones that help me that day.
Okay.
So, for instance, the first week, you know, the Picadone staff helps. You know, the pro, the assistant, whoever, you know,
right,
that kind of stuff. And we, as much as we possibly can do that. My thought behind that was I want people to pull in on one of our properties, go, oh, this is where Gabriel Jr. Picadone is. I've never been here before.
Right.
I didn't know this was back here. Oh, that's where I park. Okay, this stuff that us golfers who play a lot way take for granted.
Yes.
And I've always tried to think a lot of things I do, including the junior tour and everything that you know for a long time. I honestly really focus most of my attention on beginner to intermediate, you know, and obviously the tour is, you know, intermediate to more advanced players.
And that's where so much, you know, those first impressions, if someone,
yes,
is comfortable walking in from the parking lot and know where to go or have an idea where to go or know what questions to ask to find, they're going to be so much less anxious. They're just going to have the way they remember that experience is going to be so much better overall.
And that's
covering those little
so,
intangibles.
And you know how many of those people that in those classes, especially the Golf 101 classes specifically, but all of them, I'd start seeing playing on a golf course all of a sudden. And they'd say, oh, hey, and they know me. And but then they also walk in the golf shop. It's not just me. And there's a okay chance that they're going to walk into somebody that they talked to before. And I don't know. I'm uncomfortable in situations I've never been in. I know I've probably people don't realize that. But like, so I always try to put them like, okay, how would I want to be treated? So then we rotate between the courses, we rotate instructors. Mm-hmm. And again, it's to get, it's more of a familiarity. It's not long enough to like, we're going to make you an awesome golfer.
Right.
We're kind of touching everything. We're going to help you. We're going to get you better. But we want you to see what we have here at the, you know, I tell people, it's like, don't feel, and at the end of the last class, people are like, oh, what's next? Do it again.
Do it again. Go buy a bucket of balls. Good luck.
Yeah.
Come back and see
us again.
Yeah.
Because even me who gives private instruction, work on grip, stance, posture, aim, all those things with good players.
Yeah.
So I think they think once they've done it one time, they can't do it. You know, again, it's like, no, let's just take the same class again. Because even though when we in a general overview of the class, we will cover a general thing. If when I'm going and working on people one-on-one, you can tell people that are farther along than others, I will work specifically more on things for them than I will for somebody else. And we kind of all do that as a group. We kind of group, kind of low-level group talk.
Right.
Then when we break off, we kind of help people. If somebody's a little bit better, we probably will work on something different with them than somebody else.
Okay. Wait, I was just curious. Having not gone through the clinic route, my journey in golf probably would have been a lot better if I'd started the clinic route. I was sitting down thinking, getting ready for this interview. 5 years ago, there were five different, not even golf, men's golf associations spread across the various courses. Now, the Meadowbrook is still, they have a little bit of autonomy over there. But talk to me a little bit about the evolution of the amateur league in Lexington, how that kind of became the umbrella league, and how that's worked, maybe what's worked and what hasn't kind of within that, because that's the space I play in. Little League gets in the way, although we're hoping maybe this year a little more. But talk to me a little bit about the evolution of how we got from the Picadome Men's Golf Association and the Kearney Hill Men's Golf Association to what signups open up on March 1st.
Yeah. So when I got here, I started with the city basically 6 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And to be fair,
for listeners, I was totally against this idea. I did not want to play at Tate's Creek. I did not want to play at Lakeside. I was a vocal, staunch critic of this. And I was wrong. It's turned out to be okay.
At least you said okay.
Yeah, it's come. You know what? I've come around.
And so basically, 6 years. The situation is exactly what you just said. We had separate associations in each one of the golf courses, and just kind of as the couple, you know, that next year, I think it was the next winter where, we'd had a new director of golf just the year before that, Curtis Mitchell, who's now, mm-hmm. now our golf course superintendent of Enterprise now. And it was just kind of like we kind of all sat down and we'd have weekly staff meetings, and we kind of sat all down one time and we're like, why are we kind of competing with ourselves in a way?
It was all the same guys, right?
Yeah, well, and that's what we really did. So we did a deep dive into it as a staff, and we realized of the people that did participate in those associations, almost 85 to 90% of them were the same people. So they would all join a separate association that were all officially under the city golf courses, and then it just kind of –
And it's not like you guys were – it's not like the pros had an entrepreneurial interest in the clubs. It was all city.
It was all the city. Again, we don't – and it's like, you know, not in the private industry where you might make an extra cut of something.
Right.
You know, we don't. And so that was just kind of one of – it was almost like a light bulb moment. It was almost like, why have we been doing it this way this whole time? Especially because in even making those schedules, the pros would make sure and not schedule over each other and stuff like that. And it was, you know, and it was just kind of – It was interesting because like the culmination was when Tiger won the tour championship. Was that 2018 or 2019?
The
classic one that he came back and won. And I literally got a call from Curtis and he said, we got to do this. We got to have something like this. We got to have a culmination. And we've been talking about this. Let's make this happen. And so basically kind of a draft for ideas for the AM tour were presented. We had a lot of meetings about it. But basically the big thing was let's make it all one. We're one city golf courses. Mm-hmm. Let's be one thing instead of being separate. And then like, well, what can we give away to make it the best? And you know, the idea of free golf for a year, is a pretty nice prize at the city golf courses. And it just kind of, it organically created through that. We had a lot of meetings, and then the way shape and the way we were doing it and times and days and all that kind of thing came through. We actually sent out a lot of feelers early on to people that participated, and people like yourself did not like the idea. I think they just thought it like anything, people just don't like change.
And I belonged at Picadome and Kearney Hill because those were the only two golf courses I wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my prejudice against it. But, then we get – so I guess the first year of it was 2020.
And yes, it was.
It was a – with the world shut down for 2 months, we kind of did a short season where mm-hmm. we – it was just a quick touch. What did we play each course? Maybe twice?
Yeah. It was – we didn't start till quite late because of COVID
June,
restrictions
June
and all those kind of things. Yep. And so basically from there, I think once people realized, kind of the way we structured it, and basically it was essentially the old associations, but just amped up everything we could. And then through the sponsorship we had with Michelob Ultra, who's now the title sponsor of it, we were able to even put more into the events. And again, with us being City Golf, we're not trying to, make a profit off of anything. So any of these sponsorships or anything that we do, like for instance Michelob Ultra or anything like that, we're putting it back into the event. And so it was able to even make it nicer than the associations were. And then, season points list and playing different golf courses, different formats, and all those things. And I think it just kind of built a community amongst itself. And I think kind of once the people who kind of didn't like it kind of started playing and realizing, oh, this is actually.
What are your, I remember it was, the leagues were dying. If you, mm-hmm. I can go and Google, do a Boolean search, Picadome Men's Golf Association, and there's a webpage archive out there that has the list of maybe the 07 or 08, somewhere early, like pre-recession, and it's got 100 names, maybe 108. And then you look at who was playing in 2017, 2018. I mean, some days there were only two divisions, and it would be 40 guys out there. And
If you're lucky,
if the weather was good. What are our numbers now?
Yes.
What does that evolution look like as far as participation within the league and how it's structured?
So, for instance, last year we had over 285 unique men that played on at least one event. The way we structured the event, the way we structured the tour, kind of to make it easier for people like yourself who maybe can't play all the time, is there's no tour fee, anything to join. Mm-hmm. So people can just play once if they want to, or they can play the full season and try to win the whole shooting match. So we had over 285 people, different people that played at least one event. Typically with most of our events, with the way we structure the tee time and stuff, we kind of going to cap it at 96.
Okay.
We sold out, we capped it at where we had basically had to have a wait list for about 5 or 6 events last year.
That never happened before.
No. And I anticipate that's going to probably be even more this year. Probably we might have every event kind of sell out. We could go higher possibly. I think it might be an inverse relationship if we start going past that. That's about the number you can get on a golf course and a double tee that we typically do. You have to start going a single tee after that. And now who wants to play at 1 or 2 o'clock?
Right. And pace of play is key.
Yes.
If you're doing off single tee and you're having 5 hour rounds because the golf course is just too jam packed.
Exactly.
All of a sudden people are going to start dropping out again.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. So at that point, it's almost like, you could possibly get more people, but, I think one of the benefits of the way we do it is people are like, even if I have the last tee time, I'm probably going to be out of here by 2:30 at the latest.
Right.
And now if you start teeing off at noon or 1 o'clock.
Yeah, there's your whole day.
Yeah.
And football, Saturdays, in August once that starts. One of the things I've enjoyed the most is that you've kept a lot of the fun formats. It's not 18-hole stroke play every week. There's plenty of stroke play for the people that want it, but kind of the other fun, the formats that you can't put into your Gen Handicap app are just as fun. The red, white, and blue, that was a revelation. The flag game is something I've incorporated with my golf trip. That was one Justin used to run.
Yep.
Over at Picadome, or Aaron may even. What are there any new formats or anything?
So one of the things we've kind of If that's one of the things where even like my personal feelings, I have to kind of go with what everybody else wants to do. I'd almost do all kind of crazy formats because I love that kind of stuff. But I understand there's a balance. So we have a balance of you know, some things. Well, a couple of things we have added this year, for instance, is we have added a couple team events. So they're two-player team events that we haven't – we've pretty much done primarily individual. Now, in those events, because of, again, season points and stuff, we're having team prizes and then individuals for, like, points for the season. So we have two team events now. We have a best ball, which we had not done previously in the AM Tour. We're also doing – so typically, red, white, and blue is one of our most popular events. So
great format. For people that don't know, it's where you – for an 18-hole day, you get to tee off six holes from blue tees, which are typically further back, six from white tees, which are usually in the middle, and six from red tees, which are somewhere near the forward. And you get to pick. You get to basically make your own golf course out there. It's fabulous.
It's probably, again, so that's one, again, and so it's typically doing, it's, you know, kind of Memorial Day, Independence Day kind of thing, just doing it on that. Well, so this year we added an additional element, so it's a team one for one of them. So we have a team one for one of them. Typically, most of our events are gross only inside your handicap. For one event, we're going to do net inside your division, though. So, again, within four handicap spots, so not like you got 20s playing against twos and things like that. We did add a three-club challenge into our regular events this year. Last year, we were going to do one as a Friday night event before our club championships. That ended up not happening, I think, because of weather or something like that. But that's going to be a standard event as well this year. So a couple different things. But, again, your stroke plays, your, you know, your Nassaus, your Stableford's, Pro-Am. We're actually, speaking of the Open Championship, we're going to run a, you know, where you pick your PGA partner from the Open Championship.
I always like that for the majors. The even dating back pre-league when it was the individual clubs, you'd have the whoever was playing the weekend of the PGA Championship. You'd pick your pro and combine your score, and that was always a fun horse race deal. Well, I'm glad the formats are staying the same. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit just of something you said. Women in golf.
Yes.
I listen to a lot of sports business podcasts, and there's almost a groupthink element now that says, you know, women, female sports, golf in particular, is the new growth market. You know, we've saturated all the golf bros and all the people coming back in. It's viewed as the big business opportunity. Locally, we've got a really strong women's golf community. You look at the leadership over at the Kentucky Golf Association. Being here in Lexington, you know, our UK's women's team is phenomenal. They've got a couple of world-class players. Betty Lou Evans, who recently passed, was just a monster within the game of golf. Not just women's golf. She was, you know, a real tour de force player around here. Even Kearney Hill, we have I don't know if it's the first female pro, but Whitney just had – mentioned to her, she had to be coming up on her birthday, so she's been here over a year. She's made the cut. She's now full fledged.
She's
off probation.
Yes. And award winner, by the way. As well.
Yes, but and phenomenal. Well, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Talk to me a little bit. You know, we've been talking primarily league and men's and juniors, specifically with regard to women's golf. Talk to me a little bit about what the city offers and how. How you see, you know, something beyond just the traditional men's league and sort of what the offerings are and how that's evolved in your time at the city.
Because my
exposure to it used to be, I could never remember which night the nine-hole ladies league used to tee off at Picadome. And if they were on the course, I knew I could get off the back and it'd be fine. I could you know, chase my son down. But that's all I knew. And I know there are that is not the case anymore, thank goodness.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things about the dynamics about Lexington specifically in women's golf, which was the case when I got here, like you're mentioning, there's several women's golf associations that kind of – we are not operating them.
Clubs.
Yeah, they're Fayette Women's Golf Association. They play 18 holes, and they play on Tuesdays and they basically rotate between our city golf courses. Even though we're not operating them, they primarily just play our golf courses. There's also the Lexington Women's Golf Association, which are basically nine-holers. Same kind of deal. They rotate between our five city golf courses. Again, we do not run them or operate them in any way. Then you have what you mentioned, the Picadome. Again, that's another group that plays Picadome, but again,
right.
it's not facilitated. So what's interesting about it for our perspective is outside of – so the one thing we have done that's modified is the Play Golf Lexham Tour. We do also have women's divisions as well. And so for the most part, they kind of – their schedule somewhat mirrors the men's schedule. We do have a couple more team formats we did for them based on feedback we got from some of them as well.
That's a relatively new phenomenon, though, right?
Yes.
This didn't exist in any official capacity a couple of years ago.
No. So, for instance, when I got here, again, you had those women's associations, but as far as the city, we basically had our women's city championship. Now, we did have our women's golf clinics and things like that we did do that we continue to still provide. But as far as, playing opportunities specifically run by the city or a city golf course, there really wasn't any. And the addition to that has been the Women's Am Tour. And again, the reason there probably has been more than that is because there's such a presence of several associations that do that. Now, we also, which was before and since, I don't want to skip over Meadowbrook. Meadowbrook Golf Course does they have their version of the Medics Cup is what their league is called.
Right.
Their men play on Thursday, but their ladies also play on Tuesdays. About 4 or 5 years ago, we did kind of take over that because it was kind of dying.
Okay.
So now that is actually one of our programs. So I take that back. So we have our Play Golf Lexham Tour, and then we've also added the women's on Tuesdays, and that has shown huge growth and success. He had over 115 women that played every Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Last year.
That's phenomenal.
And is expecting to grow that even more this season.
So he's going to end up having to cap events. If John's not careful,
Yes.
Good. That's something I wanted to kind of get from the – I wasn't aware that there was such – that the women's game was just all of its own inertia. You know, someone took the initiative and created those leagues, and they were just keeping going. So I just noticed through the newsletter and things that the women's tour had been formalized, and I thought, okay, this is great. This is an opportunity for people that want to play. Because I love competitive golf. I'm not any good at it, and I don't get to play it as much as I – but there's something – you know, people do say there's golf and there's competitive golf. And I think the city tour is a nice combination, somewhere in the middle of that. You know, city championships are different. That's a separate deal.
Yes.
But the – you know, being able to compete against your friends and kind of build camaraderie—that's a—that's universal. That's white, black, green,
yep.
Male, female, everybody. I'll hit you with this one: junior golf can be a lot of different things, including insanely expensive.
Yes, yes.
as a father of two
yes,
boys,
exactly.
But that's not to the city's credit. That's not really the case with your guys' city league. It's not. I heard on I listened to the McKellar Golf podcast, and they said the CEO of the AJGA Tour made something like $875,000 as a salary. You know, it's a big national outfit, but, you know, the entrance fees to those events they're three figures, and I bet before too long some of their more marquee events might be four figures, which is, you know, that's a travel baseball season. That's a lot. Here locally, I know we have – I can never quite – it feels like the junior golf scene is always shifting. So the city – I want you to talk a little bit about your program, but there's – you know, for high-level players, I guess there are – they could travel to AJGA events. But we have the – you know, there's the first tee. There's – through the school system, there's the Do Something Extraordinary Club that Chad runs. There's the Gilbert Bunnell Foundation. Talk to me, just kind of lay out briefly, if you could, kind of how all of those organizations work together, overlap, what have you. Because as a father of kids that may want to get into junior golf, you know, there's the PGA League that through people like Man of War and the Inner Club, and how that's a lot of initials and a lot of, it seems like, people offering kind of the same thing. So talk to me a little bit about the junior golf scene in Kentucky.
So the... I think the best way to probably even talk about it is to actually maybe even go back a little bit. And this is before me. So this is a little bit of, you know, revisionist history from secondhand.
Okay.
I understand. So let's
print the legend. Don't worry about facts.
Yeah, yeah. So let's go back 20, 25 years ago.
Okay.
Golf in Central Kentucky for juniors pretty much meant, I think they said there was the Pepsi Tour, and then at the time was the Gilbert Bunnell Inner Club.
Okay.
Were pretty much your options. That was.
And what was the inner club? Was that people, kids from different golf clubs?
It was
country clubs.
It was primarily kids from country clubs. It was primarily the clubs here in Central Kentucky, city golf courses, and a lot of the private clubs participated at that time. It was a chance for their kids to kind of go play at different places, and they did team formats and things like that. And it was wildly successful around here. Josh Teeter, who plays on the PGA Tour, mm-hmm. played on it. Whitney, who's our pro here, she played on it. I wasn't from around here, so
right.
I didn't participate, but it was the thing. So fast forward 7, 8, 10 years ago, and by that time, which is happening in all sports, there's a lot of people that saw a lot of opportunity, let's just say that. And I won't go necessarily more into it than that, maybe, you know, as far as financial reasons. Hey,
this isn't just golf. I mean, the timeline, what you're saying is that's AAU basketball, that's travel baseball, that's, you know, 3-on-3, it's flag football leagues. Kids sports became big business.
And I'm not necessarily saying some people don't have their hearts in the right spot. I'm not going to accuse people of that kind of things. But now you fast forward to today, and you literally have – in Kentucky alone, off the top of my head, I'm going to go, you have the Kentucky Golf, the Kentucky section who runs their own junior tour, which we do partner with mm-hmm. for our junior city championship. Bluegrass Golf Tour. You have the Hurricane Tour. You have the U.S. Kids Tour. You have – I mean, and there's several more that I'm just not being able to think of off the top of my head. And so now there's almost, like you said, there's almost too much. Now, one thing I do notice, for instance, that most of them, though some of them will say that's not exactly what they're looking for, most of them are geared toward intermediate to more advanced, maybe, golfers.
Getting kids ready for high school golf or getting high, you know, people that want to be seen, you know, maybe for a small college opportunity.
Yeah, all the way up to AGGA and everything kind of in between.
Okay.
And basically what happened the City of Lexington and Gilbert Belknap Foundation made a partnership about 6 or 7, 8 years ago to basically kind of run their – because at that time, the city had literally no junior program at all. Weren't even doing junior camps or anything like that. So they partnered with the Gilbert Belknap Foundation and were basically under the Gilbert Belknap flag to kind of start some junior summer camps that we're doing now, the ones I just told you we sold out of.
Okay.
As well as start running their inner club that they did. That happened for several years. And then basically last year, we kind of said we kind of want to do our own thing. We still wanted to partner with them, but we kind of wanted to do it kind of focused a little bit differently than kind of they had done it in the past. So again, there was more, you know, based around team formats and things like that. And again, still kind of were designed maybe for maybe some beginner kids, maybe more intermediate, maybe more advanced kids. They're kind of, you know, they're kind of maybe, you know, kind of searching for the same thing maybe everybody else was, maybe possibly. And so last year we decided to basically start our own junior tour based on the concept of we basically sat down and said, okay, everybody else is looking for these kind of intermediate to advanced kids. We already do a fantastic job in our junior program with our PGA Junior League that we do, and most of our kids are very beginner to intermediate kids. Now in PGA Junior League, they're playing a team format. So why don't we let those kids have an opportunity to play their own golf ball, but in a fun way where they're not going to shoot 65 on 9 holes,
okay.
take forever to play. So that's where the formatting for the Play Golf Lex Junior Tour, who is sponsored by the Gilbert Belknap Foundation, they partnered with us with it, came about. It essentially kind of based on kind of an Ops 36-ish kind of mindset of players start closer to the green.
Yeah, almost kind of like a off-the-cuff long-leaf system.
Yes, right. Yes. And as they improve and shoot scores within a certain range, they then have the opportunity to advance and to graduate and move back.
The thing I really like about that is it's not – you don't have – you know, I just sat through Little League tryouts last night, makeups, and, you know, seeing where kids get pigeonholed because of their age and the disparate talent. I mean – You have some really talented 8-year-olds that, by all rights, other than the number on their birth certificate, should be playing up, you know, the equivalent of playing back a tee. And maybe you've got some really gangly, uncoordinated 9-year-olds that have, you know, that you're doing them a disservice by sticking them all the way back there. That's a feature of the tour that I saw that I really
and that's
was
actually
smart.
What's interesting was when we did this, you know, the thought was, you know, really help kids kind of find their level. And what I didn't even anticipate, which was what actually you said first was, I was actually more as surprised as how much the kids that were kind of the kids that were better than their age, better than their whatever, actually had an opportunity to go back. On some of these other tours, they wouldn't have the opportunity. They're pigeonholed into it. Because, again, ours is based on skill level, not by age or gender.
Yeah. The my one criticism of the state level AM tour was that they could do well. They used to have kind of skill level delineations, and then at some point it got changed to age hard fast rule, and all of a sudden I'm playing 7,000 yards back there with some ex college golfers. Like, that's not my scene, man. I need
exactly. and my whole thing is golf is supposed to be fun, right? And I have the belief that, you know, if somebody has success early, they're more likely going to want to come back and do it again. If you put them back at a tee that they're not ready for, and they shoot 65 on 9 holes. Now, granted, there's some people that obviously are playing golf today that went through that same situation. They're playing golf. They're like, well, I did that.
Right.
Well, think of the friends you've played with that aren't playing golf anymore. And again, from us, from a parks and recreation side of it, like, it would be cool if these kids make their high school team. It'd be cool if they played college golf. I'm not that concerned about that.
Right.
That's other people's bag, and I'll let them have that, right? I think there's a time and place for those people. But I want kids that just want to come out and play golf with their friends.
Yeah.
You know, even if they never play on their high school team, if they just love golf and they want to come out when they're in high school or in college or after that and come out and just play our golf courses on a Saturday when they're off work, when they're older, that to me is the win.
Those are the ones, future golfers. They're not going to get as burned out.
Yes.
You know, they're going to enjoy playing with mom and dad
yes.
when they get a chance. And they're, you know, one of the criticisms I like from my Australian friends, they say, you know, that's who become private club golfers. Like, yes, there are some country clubs that are blue blood clubs in a community, and they'll always have a roster full of people. But, you know, you take half a step down from that. Those are the people that when they become adults and they become busy with families, you know, it's like, well, where can I don't have time to really play. Those are the ones that become, you know, private golfers that sustain the industry that
yes.
all of a sudden they get their kids in. It's really intuitive if you stop and think about it. So yeah, so I played in one with my son last year. We had a blast. I'm hopeful that he will. I'm not going to push him, but I'm hopeful that he will want to come out because it was fun. It seemed, you know, we had kids of different ages and even our little group we played with. So,
you know, there's no perfect system. There's a little bit of pushback, especially when you get to boys that are 11, 12, 13 years old, and they're like, whoa, wait, why am I playing with a 7-year-old girl? So, and again, we kind of were aware of that and kind of tried to, you know, make pairings. And
you know what golf media says about that? Play better, kid.
Yes, exactly. and you know, but then again, it might not be a perfect system for everybody,
right.
But we feel like it's going to be a really good system for a lot of people. And we are very thankful for the Gilbert Bedell Foundation and their support of it and their sponsorship of it and working together with it, because we're able to, again, like with the Michelob Ultra Tour, we're able to enhance the experience. So even though while this is fun, we're still giving out medals to the kids that finish the best each time. So we're giving out some prize money, some prizes and stuff like that. It just makes it, you know, again, makes golf fun, makes them want to come back, you know, and, you know, that allows us, and also their brand recognition from having the Gilbert Bedell Interclub for so long and so strong, you know, they kind of have a following. So it really helps kind of both things together to, you know, do what's best for the kids.
Did that come out of the old Bank One Classic? Is that a vestige of the senior tour? Is that how, do you know how Gilbert Bedell got started? I mean, it's named after Larry Gilbert.
Larry Gilbert and Gilbert Bedell. I have heard a little bit of it.
I feel
almost to speak on it just because I don't want to get
– You don't want to get that wrong.
Yeah, right? I don't want to get that wrong. I know I've heard some very great things about both those men and how great a job they did, you know, to build what they did. The specific details of it I'm actually not very intimately familiar with.
Yeah, it was just an off-the-cuff curiosity.
Yeah.
We're sitting in the Kearney Hill Clubhouse and, you know, see the pictures of when this place hosted. And it just popped in my head.
Yeah.
So I mentioned I love – competitive golf, and the league is about the right speed and temperature for me, but every once in a while, if I'm available, I like to try to participate in the championships.
Yep.
You know, that plays to my ego and my vanity that
yeah.
I want to see my name. Also, one thing about the league that has been great, the embrace of the golf genius, of the live software the score tracking software, so you can see where your buddies are in relation to you, and you know what number you might have to post. That's been an element that has really worked for the leagues and for the competitive golf. A couple of change ups this year. Talk to me a little bit about what the formal city championship offerings look like for 24.
So we do have 7 city championships that we offer that we're offering this season. As far as what's different than last year, the kind of the two big changes is, so a couple years ago we did try to start a mid-am. Mm-hmm. We really thought that we had this idea that that market was going to be something that really wanted to have a city championship for it. Unfortunately, the last couple years, unlike everything else, it actually kind of didn't really go. And actually kind of the people that are really in that mid-am range, they're even far less people than even it looks like if you look at our pure number, So it's kind of interesting dynamic. So we kind of decided this year that with all the offerings that we do have between the AM Tour and the city championships and things like that, that that wasn't something we were gonna do for this season. The other events we've kind of all, you know, some we've done in the past. COVID actually was one of the things that restarted the match play.
That's the event I absolutely will not miss because you can schedule it kind of on your own.
And that's the reason it got created during COVID. So, again, we had a brainchild. We can't do anything right now. There's no contact. That was when everything was, like, really on lockdown. We can't get groups of people together. There was high mandates, obviously, with the government. We were really,
right,
really, really strict on that. And so it's like, what can we do? And it's like, oh, they schedule their own match on their own time, ride separate golf carts from each other. And that has massively grown. The first year was okay during COVID, and then it has progressively gone more and more every year. Like you said, the format is,
Some of my most memorable moments on the golf of like competitive golf were not winning the league championship. It was my moments in matches, win or lose. Like the deciding moments when Chan holds a putt on me and breaks my heart, or I hit one against Tim. You know, these guys, that's a bond I've got with those guys forever now.
Exactly,
and the memories are crystal clear. So that, and I always wanted to play in the state, but that's like a 3-day commitment, three consecutive days, which unless you're retired or, you know, self-employed and have a super flexible, it's just really tough to make that. So that the match play is the one that I'd never miss. Some of the others, I really wish I didn't miss.
Yeah, the only date we lock people into is the championship match.
Right.
And so it makes it – I think that's the other reason we had a lot of participation in it. It makes it really flexible. Basically, the two players, they have a couple weeks to find a date and time that works both best for both them, and I think it works really well. We even last year, amongst our convincing and had a women's division even last year too, so that made me really happy.
Good.
Because I wanted them to be involved in it as well, because they typically had not been. So I anticipate that probably having the same or more ladies participating as well this year. That we have our Lexington City Team Championship, which has been
– That's a two-man?
That's a two-player, yep. And it has been very popular even pre-COVID.
Yep.
That's one of the events. It's a two-day event out here at Kearney. You play 4 different 9-hole formats over 2 days, and that one is pretty much sold out every single year, even pre-COVID. It's probably one of our highlights.
That's the one you can – dads and sons play together, fathers and daughters play, best friends, that maybe go try to win. Different levels of competitiveness, I guess. There's a point system, right, for age. Is that one?
Yes, that was created. I don't know who created that. It was created a long time ago. So the divisions are actually by combined age.
Okay.
And not by handicaps or any of that kind of stuff. So it's a unique and varied thing of what we do. We also have our two city golf scrambles, which I call city scrambles or city championship scrambles.
Right.
Which we kind of, this year, we kind of bookend the season. We have a two-player scramble, Cabin Fever, that kicks off the season. That's actually in a couple weeks on the 23rd of March. Every year it's at Tate's Creek. And then our most popular event that we have all year is the Pumpkin Patch, also at Tate's Creek, to kind of finish out the year at the end of the year. We have a morning and an afternoon. We sell out both, usually 2-3 weeks out.
Oh, wow.
That one every year. That one's crazy popular, even more and more every year. I basically almost stopped putting a registration close date on it because it's not going to matter at this point. So you have our team championship, which is then followed by our we talked about match play, team championship.
So you've got your city championship, your women's championship,
yep.
Your senior championship.
Your senior championship, yep.
Is
your team.
Okay.
We also, a couple years ago, created what's called the Bordas Cup. It's essentially our women's team championship. Mm-hmm. Now, those are 4-player teams, and they play a really cool format. It's called a blind best ball. So it's they play with handicaps, but okay. they don't know how many scores are going to count on the hole until they get up to the green, and we put a little thing on the little piece of paper on the flag that tells them how many scores count on the
hole. Okay. So everyone's got to be invested all the way
to at least get up to the green.
Yeah.
And that one's been hugely successful. This will probably be the fourth or fifth year that we've done it, and it's been even more popular than our Women's City event. I think we had 80 to 90 ladies last year. We host it here at Kearney every year, and it's hugely popular event that we put on.
Okay. Is the city championship – now, is the – are you guys involved the Lexington Open? Is that coming back? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yes. So the Lexington Open is – that's one of the events that was kind of created with the partnership of the Gilbert Bunnell Foundation.
Okay.
The Gilbert Bunnell Foundation is hosting that event here at Kearney.
Okay.
Now, we are helping with a lot of the tournament operations sides of it, the registrations and things like that. But it is actually officially their event.
Okay.
It's not a city golf event. It's actually it's bringing back the old Lexington Open that Kearney used to host for the Gilbert Bunnell Foundation for years.
Okay. I don't know if you know off the top of your head, what are your participation numbers on those championships? Are you getting, you mentioned that the popular scramble events are selling out. Is that something that has grown through COVID, or has that always been pretty consistent the last 5 or 6 years?
The pumpkin patch took a little bit of a dip when everything took a dip a little bit, but even not that didn't take much. The cabin fever is more of a new creation mm-hmm. event, but that one's been popular. But the rest of our events have seen a rise since COVID a little bit. It's an uptick from previous years. All of participation, pretty much every one of our city championships has increased since COVID.
Golf water cooler talk has been a mess for about a year and a half. The men's professional golf business has just become a soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
Amongst my friends, I don't know that I've got any hardcore fans of either of the PGA Tour, of the new LIV Tour. It just doesn't come up. Have you seen any effect from that trickling down to the game that gets played or the talk that happens kind of around the golf shop? Or is that having any noticeable impact at all, or is that just so different from what happens day to day in green grass operations?
I think it is. I don't know that. I mean, it's the one thing I for sure, it's definitely water cooler talk, like you said. It's definitely something people constantly talk about. But as far as what it's doing for people's actual experience themselves playing, whether they play rounds or tournaments or anything like that, I don't necessarily know that it's making any difference one way or the other. I think from what I've talked to, they almost don't pay attention to the professional game as much. And maybe it might be actually increasing our rounds, because instead of staying home on a Sunday.
Oh, it used to be Sunday afternoons were the best time to go play golf around the city, because everybody would be
– Exactly.
If it was football season, they're on the couch watching – all the NFL, the rest of the year, if it was between the Masters and the British Open, people were watching those, having a golf nap on Sunday afternoon.
And
that's great.
And that from an operator side is the thing I notice, even not being directly in it every day now like it used to be, is you used to say Saturday afternoons, Sunday afternoons were dead. You could almost tell people when they could come out and play. And again, is it because more people are playing? Is it because of other things like that? But those times, I mean, used to be when UK football played, there was nobody playing. And that was when they were Not good. And now they're decent, decent to good. And there's definitely way more interest locally in that. But still, our tee sheet will fill up.
I remember yelling at Aaron when he was at Picadome, because he's an ardent Florida State football fan. I was like, buddy, you're scheduled. They got a noon kickoff. I can't, the Cats are playing. It didn't even occur to me to look, because they're so bad. Why would anyone choose UK football? I had a fleeting thought. From your clinics, where you're harvesting a lot of beginners, is the professional game they saw on TV or Tiger Woods, Roy McIlroy, any of that, are they coming to the game because of the professional game, or are they, do you think, more coming into golf because their friends are doing it?
I think it's because their friends are doing it.
I wish the people running the golf business understood that fact.
Yes.
How divorced those two worlds are.
I mean, I literally think of most of those people in the class obviously have not done this. If I sat there and just mentioned not the top couple names, if I just went down the next people, I'm not talking about way down the list of players' names. I bet most of those people would not know a single one of them.
Oh, no.
And that should tell you all you need to know about
pro golf. Pro golfer or relief pitcher is a fun game. You just throw a name out.
Yes. Yes. And I would be even crazy with it. Just take out, okay, once you go past the top 15 in the world, start saying 16, 17, who me and you would both obviously easily know. Right. Right? But those people are like, I've never heard that name in my life. Yeah, pro golfer, relief, that's actually hysterical. I bet they'd be like,
yeah,
well, he's on the Diamondbacks?
It's a fun game. right. I'll get you out of here on this one. What's your one big thing, maybe either you're holding your breath for or you're really excited to see how it plays out for 2024 in golf?
In our golf or in golf?
In any golf. You love your family. Yes, okay, yeah, yes, so yeah, there are going to be fun events there. But in golf, either here or somewhere else, what are you watching? What are you looking forward to? What are you hoping for?
I think for me personally, because one of the reasons I got this business, which I think we talked about in the last one, is I'm a golf nerd. Not every golf professional is, and I'm not saying that's everybody's right. Just different. And so, you know, there was a time in my life where I was obsessed with the PGA Tour and I was obsessed with all those things. I'm just more obsessed locally now. Mm-hmm. And between the tours that we run, the Junior Tour, the AM Tour, the Women's AM Tour, the City Championships, how much play we gonna do? That's the stuff that, believe it or not, just gets me excited every day. And always trying to think of ways, how can we make all these things better so that more people want to spend their hard-earned dollar? Because, again, inflation's going up. You never know when 2008's coming again, right? And we're all fully aware of that around here. Trust me, it's not – I think sometimes the private clubs forget about that with some of the improvements things they do. And
your stewardship of golf dollars is different than what some of these private clubs can do.
Exactly. And so we're kind of all mindful and we're kind of like, let's enjoy it while it's here too, but also be mindful that, you know, people's discretionary income is something to be valued and treasured. And we don't take that lightly. We try to, I believe we as a staff do not take that lightly. You know, whether we have to raise rates because, you know, things are going
up. Right. Fertilizer costs more. Diesel fuel costs more. You know, staff salaries are up. You know, labor to.
So when you're asking someone to come in and just on a regular day of golf and they're checking in and, you know, it's being mindful of that because I used to say this all the time to my staff. I was like, it's not just you're thinking, oh, they'll go to another golf course. They might just stop coming playing golf. Like, they might just decide, you know, the movie industry is not good right now. But I used to use the movie industry. Maybe they just decided to start going to see movies with that money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you're not just like, oh, they'll go play golf somewhere else.
Right. They may choose. I know I told you I was going to get you out of this. Let me add a postscript to this. What impact are you seeing with participation from the non-traditional golf? You know, that's been one of the other. The opportunity to grow the women's market within golf. The other thing that gets talked about a lot is capturing the top golf golfer, capturing the simulator mm-hmm. golfer. What has your experience been so far seeing, if any, are people that are coming, beginners or people that are coming back that may be of intermediate skill level, are they coming from these non-green grass situations? Or is that become, you know, is that so big that it's kind of becoming a separate world? We don't have a huge exposure to it here in central Kentucky, but it's coming. And we have more simulators now than we did pre-COVID.
Yep. I definitely see that just in the people that are taking the classes, because I think that's probably, for me, what I see on a mostly time basis, as well as people that walk in our golf shops, I definitely notice a difference in demographics. From probably pre-COVID, and I think that's an awesome thing.
Okay.
You're definitely seeing more diversity as far as ages, as far as, you know, gender, as far as, you know, races and things like that. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I think, and, you know, the more people you can share it with and in touch, I think the better, you know, long-term the health of the business and golf itself is going to be, you know, instead of, you know, the old cliche old white man sport.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the funny thing. You know, the city leagues here, you get people that are tradesmen, you know, that are 9-to-5 workers. It is not a bunch of rich white guys meeting.
No.
No, we are one of the things I love about the league is it is a cross section of humanity that shows up for Saturday or Sunday morning tournaments out here. It's great.
Yes.
I was just curious. You know, we don't have, We've got a couple new simulators that have opened up. We had the Parsec Social that didn't make it.
That didn't make it closed.
It's kind of a putting short game deal. You know, 100 years ago, there was an indoor golf league in Frankfurt.
Yep.
I would go over there some in the winter. So I was just curious if that was drawing more. I know the simulator technology keeps getting better. Personally, pickleball is a scourge on society, and I know that there are plans for the parks to embrace that. There's a new pickleball warehouse over off, you know, if you're driving New Circle Road.
I drive it twice a day, yeah.
I see that, and I just shake my fist at it as I'm driving down the road looking like a crazy person. But here we're so far removed. We're an hour from a Topgolf,
yep.
You know, right now. So I was just curious if I see people that are in the league. I see in their social media feeds they're going and playing simulator golf. But those were hardcore golfers anyway.
Yep.
Those were golf nerds to start. So I just didn't know if that was feeding in yet or if it will ever. You know, that's one of the big debates. Is golf going to capture those people, or are they always going to be bowling lane golfers, essentially?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just people that – like me. I would not consider myself a bowler. I would not count as a bowler, but I go once a year and throw a ball down the lane.
It's fun. And like, that was nice.
Yeah.
But I'm not buying a ball. I'm not buying shoes.
No, exactly. So that's I think it has the potential to. And then when those people need opportunities to learn more about the game, that the programs and pricing and structures of things need to be in place to facilitate that.
Yeah, simulator golf is insanely expensive right now. That has a lot to do with it, I think.
Yeah. But I think that honestly, that's probably the biggest thing. They used to talk about this a lot with the PGA. It's when you have your beginner level classes, that's awesome. Everybody's killing it at that. And they've said this for years. What do you do next?
Yeah.
Where do you turn that person from who's just getting started in clinic? And where do you get them to be what I would consider a regular golfer, you know, play 15 to 25 times a year? You know, how do you turn that into that? And that's where the impactful thing is. Not if you can get them to show up to Topgolf. It's can you turn Topgolf to playing regular rounds of
To having a regular foursome or joining the league or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Step one, underpants. Step three, profits. That's step two.
Yes.
The gnomes.
Underpants and gnomes.
Yeah, that's right.
South Park, yes.
A lot of wisdom in that.
Yes, exactly. What's step number two? Step one.
Yeah.
Step three, make profit.
Hey, what's anybody remember step? Yeah. That's so smart.
Hey, thanks for stopping by for this episode of the Blind Shots Podcast. I played tragically little tournament golf last year. My boys' sports schedules and a few travel items kept me away from competitive golf for most of the year, and I missed it. Spending any time with Chris, and I always miss tournament golf even more. So I'm cautiously optimistic that maybe I'll be able to participate in a few more events in 2024. Wherever you are, whatever kinds of tournaments or competitions are available, even if you don't think tournament golf is your thing, I'd encourage you to give it a try. It's a fun way to play golf and make new golf friends, and who couldn't use a few more of those? Most importantly, of course, I hope you enjoyed what you heard here today. If you didn't enjoy this episode, I'm sorry, but we'll try to do a little better next time, I promise. Sit up straight, drink lots of water today, and as always, when you have the choice, do decide to go for it and take dead aim.
Which is your favorite club to hit?
My driver.
Why do you like hitting your driver best?
Because it hits the ball hard and far.